organised women's movement took up. So, for example, education should be the same, more or less, for boys and girls, not shelter the girls and send the boys into the world. And that was one obvious example. She also was showing exactly that the hands of women were tied the moment they were married, their husbands owned them, their property, their bodies, their children. They couldn't say no to intercourse, for example. She shut her bedroom door, but that was breaking the law. She was an outlaw, in Mary Wollstonecraft's terms, Helen, because she took the child and hid him from the father.
It's a terribly important book, but that shouldn't hide the fact that actually this is an immensely enjoyable drama. I want to make this clear. I was listening to it yesterday afternoon. There's something sort of wonderfully wintry and atmospheric about it. But Pam and Patsy, thank you both very much indeed. And we're going to enjoy it now. This is the first part of Anne Bronte's novel, The Tenant of Wildfell Hall. Now, as we've mentioned, the story is set in early 19th century Yorkshire. And we start with Helen Graham's arrival in the neighbourhood.
You must go back with me to the autumn of 1827. My father had been a gentleman farmer, and I, by his express desire, had succeeded him in that same quiet occupation. Though not very willingly, for ambition urged me to higher aims.
Sancho! Come on, lad.
That's it, good lad. Who'll be a farmer, eh?
It was a cold, damp, cloudy evening in October as I plodded home from the fields. I told myself my work was honest. I harm no one. I only return to the land what the land gave to me. But the gleam of a fire through the parlour window did more to comfort me than all these sage reflections. I was young then, remember. Only 24. I had much to learn.
I went to call on Reverend Millwood this afternoon. You should have come, Gilbert. Eliza was there.
Sir? Rose, Eliza Millwood has not £20 to call her own. What you see in her, Gilbert, I do not know. She's an artful minx. More tea?
Yeah, thanks, Mother.
You'll never guess what she told me.
What?
There's someone up at Wildfell. Mr. Lawrence has been renting out the place for a week, and none of us knew.
Wildfell Hall?
Well, I never.
That's not all. To a single lady.
I can hardly believe it.
She's called Mrs. Graham, and she's in mourning. Not more than 25, maybe 26. But so reserved. She's barely civil, they said.
Why did we not see her at church?
She didn't come. Reverend Millwood is going to visit. He's going to ask that very question.
The following Sunday, everyone wondered whether the fair unknown would come to church. I confess, I looked with interest towards the pew belonging to Wildfell Hall. And there she was, a tall, ladylike figure, dressed in black. Her hair was raven and hung in glossy ringlets. Her complexion was clear and pale. There was a slight hollowness about the cheeks and eyes, the mouth a little too thin. Just then, she happened to lift her eyes and meet mine. My skin froze. I did not withdraw my gaze, neither did she. Then she seemed to remember something and turned away. I kept looking, waiting for her to find my eyes again, but she would not.
Of course we are a small neighbourhood, Mrs. Graham. More like a family. You'll find there are no secrets here. You have met my daughter?
Eliza. Mrs. Graham.
Mrs. Graham! I shall be hosting a small party at the farm. Would you join us? Everyone will be there.
I'm sorry, I have no carriage, Mrs. Markham. And I don't go to parties.
May I introduce my son, Gilbert?
Good morning.
Pleased to meet you, Mrs. Graham.
Well, I call that plain rude.
Mm. The following Tuesday, I was out with my gun. Finding nothing but carrion crow in the wooded valleys, I climbed a steep hill towards Wildfell. It is a desolate place. An Elizabethan mansion, built of dark grey stone, shielded only from the war of wind by a group of Scotch firs, looking as stern as the hall itself. I crept closer. In one wing only, the broken windows and roof had been repaired. A thin wreath of smoke curled from a chimney. I stood watching, half thinking of the fair young hermit inside those dark walls, when I heard a rustling from a tree close by.
Hey, Dougie! Hey, Dougie!
It was a child. A boy, no more than 5 years old. He climbed higher, slipped his footing and fell suddenly.
Help!
He was caught, hanging by his clothes in the scraggy branches. I dropped my gun and ran.
Mama!
Mama! Oh, no, it's all right. I've got you.
Give me that child!
I wasn't hurting him. He was caught in a tree.
He's mine.
Well, he could have hung. You told me you had a son.
I beg your pardon. I thought...
What? You thought that I'd kidnapped him?
I didn't know. You mustn't run off, haven't I told you? You must stay where I can see you.
Allow me to introduce myself.
I know who you are. Good morning, Mr. Markham. Come on.
I repaired to the vicarage to soothe my ruffled temper with the sweet company of Eliza Millwood.
Have you heard about Mrs. Graham? She has a child and none of us knew it. Who can she be, Gilbert?
I squeezed Eliza's hand. She repaid me with one of her most bewitching glances. Two days later, the mysterious tenant of Wildfell Hall came to call.
This is a surprise. And such a walk for your boy. I wonder you didn't leave him at home.
Arthur is my only treasure. I'm his only friend. We don't like to be separated.
My dear, I call that doting. A boy shouldn't be tied to his mother's apron strings. He should learn to be ashamed.
I trust my son will never be ashamed to love his mother.
Hello again, little man.
I like your dog.
He's called Sancho. Do you want to stroke him?
He licked my hand.
He likes you.
He tickles.
Arthur.
Well, he's all right, Mrs. Graham.
Come here.
Reverend Millwood, another glass.
Oh, there's nothing like your home-brewed ale, Mrs. Markham.
Mrs. Graham.
Thank you. No, I will take water.
A glass for your boy.
No.
Just a drop.
You're not a Miss Nancy, are you, boy?
Mama.
It's all right. No one will make you drink it. Not here. He hates the sight of strong drink. The smell of it makes him sick. I've done all I can to make him hate it.
Well, Mrs. Graham, I thought you had more sense. Think what sort of a man you'll make him.
Not only are you making a fool of the boy, but you are despising the gifts of Providence.
At least this is one vice from which I can save him. I wish there were more.
Mrs. Graham, if you wish your son to pass honourably through the world, you cannot clear all the stones from his path. He must learn for himself to walk over them.
I shall hold his hand and clear all the stones I can. There will be plenty more that I can't. And show me this man who has the virtue to resist all temptation.
You're very complimentary about us.
I know nothing about you, Mr. Markham. I speak only of those I do know. Would you expose a girl to all temptation in order to teach her?
A girl?
Oh, a girl is different.
Why? Because she's weaker than a man. More liable to sin? I wouldn't send a girl into the world with no warning of what lay ahead of her. And, Mr. Markham, if I thought my son would grow up into what the world calls a man, I'd rather he died tomorrow. Arthur, we should go.
So soon?
You ladies will always have the last word.
Not at all. You can have as many as you like, but I'm afraid I shan't stay to hear them. Mrs. Markham. Yeah. Reverend Millwood.
Goodbye, Arthur.
You haven't said goodbye to Mr. Markham.
Mrs. Graham.
Mr. Markham.
She's a very singular lady. I don't know what to make of her.
And what do you make of our new neighbour?
Can't say I like her, Lawrence. But she's your tenant. What do you think?
I hardly know her.
He looked down and bit his lip. I scarcely noticed at the time, only afterwards, when I was led to recall this and other small moments of a similar nature, I began to see. But I must not rush ahead. It was my sister's idea that I should go with her to Wildfell Hall.
Just to see for ourselves how she lives.
I don't need to see how she lives.
She won't bite.
She might.
Oh, what a lonely place it is out here. How do you think she bears it?
I wasn't expecting this today. You'll excuse me if I continue to work.
She took up her place at an easel, now and again glancing at her canvas, giving it an occasional touch of her brush. It was a view of the hall in the early morning, rising against a sky of silvery blue, faithfully caught and beautiful.
Hello, Mr. Markham.
Hello, little man.
Do you want to see my feathers?
Go on, then.
But this is a picture of Wildfell.
I've nowhere else to paint.
This is a gross one.
Oh. So why have you called it Fernley Manor in Cumberland?
Because there are people who might recognise my style and come here. I don't want that.
Don't you keep your pictures, Mrs. Graham?
I sell them.
You should visit the bay, Mrs. Graham. There are fine views of the sea from there.
Would you excuse me?
Oh, I don't know what to make of her. Look out of the window.
You look out the window.
I swear there's someone in the garden. And on the paintings, it isn't just the place name she changes. Her initials are false too, look.
Mrs. Blackburn.
My sister picked up a canvas that had been lent against the wall. It showed a young gentleman.
Gilbert, who do you think this is?
His blue eyes almost seemed to wink, and his soft mouth was on the verge of laughter.
He looks a rogue.
It was only someone about a painting.
Mrs. Graham, would it be impertinent to ask who this is?
It would.
Rose, we should go. Goodbye, little man. Thank you for showing me your feathers.
Goodbye.
Mr. Markham, I'm sorry I offended you.
When a lady condescends to apologise, there is no keeping one's anger.
Please forgive me.
I squeezed her hand in mine, and we parted friends.
Where has she come from? Why is she here?
Why is she so private?
The new tenant of Wildfell Hall caused gossip in our neighbourhood from the moment she arrived.
Why does she live up there?
Who was her husband?
Who is the father of her child?
And part two of The Tenant of Wildfell Hall is on Woman's Hour tomorrow, and that episode is repeated at 7:45 tonight. I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks to everybody who's emailed the programme today and tweeted on a variety of topics, particularly about depression, and many of you expressing your gratitude to Ruby Wax for coming out and talking about it and setting up the website as well. This listener says, my depression is chronic. It's not something I can talk away, though I have seen psychiatrists. It started when I was 8, and now at 50, I've had to learn to live with it. So I say, thank God for the modern antidepressants. I think they're wonderful. I feel myself and not divorced from my feelings like previous medications, and I believe I can cope. Another listener says, I've just been discharged from hospital on such a high dose of antidepressants that the dosage is already being queried by the pharmacist. Now what? Do I stay like this for life? Treatment should be with an eye on the end game and not just the now. But I do say good luck to Ruby Wax and her site, and thanks to her and others for all the work they're doing on depression. Now, tomorrow on Woman's Hour, it's more often than not the longest relationship in your life, and often one of the trickier ones as well. We're talking siblings on Woman's Hour tomorrow.
Woman's Hour is presented by Jane Garvey and produced by Kirsty Starkey. Tomorrow night on Radio 4, Claudia Hammond reports on why an innovative scheme for people with anxiety disorders has become so successful. All in the Mind is tomorrow night at 9 o'clock. After the news, women talk about how they cope with life on the outside when men go to prison.
It's what we do here at FIFA. It's what we are for, to look after the great family of football.
Last year, England made a bid to stage the World Cup.
England World Cup in 2018 will be terrific. A credit to FIFA.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
The McKinsey report says categorically that the England bid will generate more income than any of our rivals. We're way ahead.
The drama behind the £15 million World Cup bid that ended in humiliation. The Bid, the BBC Radio 4 Friday play, this week at 9 o'clock.